What I'd now like to share with you is a couple of real commercial successes. These are companies that at some point changed what they were doing. In the first case, we have Coors, which went kosher when they started to bring product into the Northeast. A large proportion of the kosher market is in the Northeast. And so they decided when they were moving in to undergo the process involved in going kosher. And they then look at their share of market at the local level. And the largest single share increase, which I really don't understand, though I have some speculations, which I won't share today, is that they had an 18% share increase in the Philadelphia market. That is, they took away from other beer companies 18% of the total beer sales in the Philadelphia market. That is an unbelievable increase in sales for a product during an introduction. Dannon did an interesting thing. They had one of the supervisions, one of the Hexers, that was not as well accepted and was not considered part of the normative mainstream. In going to normative mainstream, they kept very detailed records of their sales, and they were able to show that in just switching to a more reliable supervision, sales in most of their major urban markets increased 1 to 2% in the highly competitive yogurt market. This was considered a real success and certainly more than covered the cost of going kosher. Another example of kosher in the marketplace is the story with General Foods, which then became Kraft and Kraft General Foods and is now part of the Kraft Foods. They have a long history of working with the Jewish community, of advertising heavily in magazines and newspapers that target Jewish families, and their penetration into Jewish homes is much larger than their penetration into the broader market. So that Post, which is sort of our third ranked cereal company, only has 15% of the regular market, yet in the kosher market, it has 35% of the kosher homes. Recognizing that their two major competitors, Kellogg's and General Mills, both are kosher and are also normative mainstream, but have simply not done the target marketing. So here's a case where a company with a long history of target marketing is able to get a much higher penetration in a unique specialized market. Our next example also comes from the Kraft family of foods and is even more dramatic, which is Maxwell House Coffee. Maxwell House, the very specific product, has been very, very heavily advertised. And in fact, among the other ways that they promote the product is during Passover, they give out traditionally the special books that are used in the home for the Seder, for the family meal that celebrates Passover. So their penetration in this case is 60% of kosher homes versus 35% of regular homes. So again, we see both in the Maxwell and Post examples of how long-term dedication to developing a kosher market can, in fact, lead to some real significant economic benefits. Finally, we have ShopRite supermarkets in the New York, New Jersey area, and they have gone into a very, very strong private label program. By private label, we mean products that are sold as ShopRite. So it would be a can of ShopRite peas, cereal that would be ShopRite cereal. And they have about 1,200 different products that are sold with the ShopRite label that have kosher supervision. And they go so far as to put out a book once a year listing all of their kosher products. In fact, they've gone even one step further, as have a number of supermarkets in the last few years, which is to open up certain stores with dedicated kosher sections, which in sometimes has even meant a dedicated meat market, a dedicated deli, sometimes a dedicated sandwich making operation, which in fact is then under continuous rabbinical supervision, because at the retail level, when you're doing food service, particularly where not everything is kosher, you really need a great deal of ongoing inspection. And so in that kind of a circumstance, and again, here in the Kosher Dining Hall, we also work with fairly almost continuous inspection. In recent years, a number of companies have actually gone through the process of going kosher. And we have, again, the competitive pressure, which you can see. I talked about Coors. Guess what? Budweiser's gone kosher. Miller's is also apparently at this point going kosher. Green Giant went kosher. You're saying, well, why on fruits and vegetables? That's a issue we haven't dealt with previously, which is concern for insect infestation. And in order to ensure that products are insect-free, because as you'll notice, insects aren't on my kosher list, the community, as it has become stricter, has decided that some of the leniencies with fruits and vegetables are no longer applicable as we move into integrated pest management, and the control over insects is not as tight. And so there has been a desire to make sure that vegetable products, particularly canned vegetables, are also under supervision. Nabisco went kosher some number of years ago. And in fact, the process of taking a bakery kosher is an extremely complex process. And it actually took Nabisco over 3 years to go kosher on a number of its cookie lines, Oreos, Ritz crackers, Triscuits, and so forth. And this was a process that they paid for rabbinical supervision for over 3 years before the first product hit the market. And that was a process that they decided to undertake after some extensive discussion, some of which I participated in, and realized that, in fact, it was worth it to take the economic hit initially that it would take to make the process. And I had the pleasure, in fact, in Ithaca, of having some of the first kosher Oreos so that I could share with my kosher observant friends the first time they got to eat Oreos. Cracker Jack's is another. Nestle's, through its Wishbone division, Wishbone is another product. Coming back to Nestle's again, the chocolate industry has been fairly competitive. We see both Nestle's and M&M going kosher. And we have then, even at the retail, some companies using a single store or a few stores. Nathan's, the famous Coney Island hot dog, which always was a beef hot dog, but was not made with kosher meat, have opened a few stores that have only kosher meat. And then we see Keebler's. Guess what? Nabisco went kosher. Keebler's now feels the competitive pressure to do so. Entenmann's, which really is a different kind of a baked product, had done so a few years ago, and we saw a few chocolate companies, and one of the others is Godiva Chocolates, which are the upmarket chocolates, also finding it worthwhile to go kosher. So what we see here is a number of the brands many of you will recognize going kosher in relatively recent years, as it's become clear that kosher is here to stay, and the market with education and consumer knowledge is actually expanding, and we are seeing more and more of our major companies, where possible, taking products kosher. On the flip side, we also can cite some examples of market failures. That is where a company did something, and because it failed to take kosher into account, it ran into problems. The first one I want to cite is a bottling company. A bottling company is somebody who makes soda. And this was a company that's market was mainly in the Northeast. And they decided they were paying for kosher supervision, but weren't getting the full benefit of it. So what they decided to do was to drop it. Well, they dropped it, and almost immediately sales fell 20%. They became kosher real quick. Two other interesting examples. One was a European vitamin manufacturer that had looked at the market. It was a small vitamin manufacturer, was not part of the vitamin cartel that we've read about after this event happened. And they realized that they could sell their product in the United States for probably about 15% less than the going market rate. So they figured that this was the way to go. They invested a great deal of money in marketing, and went out to all the people who use vitamins in food. Well, who uses vitamins in food? It is mainly the cereals, which contain all of these added vitamins. And so they went to all the cereal companies. But I've already pointed out that the cereal companies, in fact, essentially all are kosher. Well, the obvious thing happened. Everybody at the cereal company said, your prices are wonderful. Where's your kosher certification? And the company sort of had this blank look. They called me when they found out that they had a problem to try to help them. But by the time they were able to go through the certification process, and for some of the vitamins, this is not a trivial matter, they lost 2 years. And by that point, the momentum and the whole marketing situation in the U.S. had changed. And they eventually got absorbed by one of the large vitamin companies, and that project is history. The other example is a little more subtle. One of the byproducts of cheese manufacture is something called whey. When Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet eating her curds and whey, she was really eating her curds, and the soup that comes with the curds is called whey. It contains some proteins, and it contains milk sugar called lactose. And we used to dump this whey into our streams, and the Environmental Protection Agency decided that this was not a good thing to do. And so dairies or cheese manufacturers have to figure out what to do with whey. And there's a whole collection of things that us food scientists and the rest of the industry have worked together to figure out uses for whey. And one of the clever uses of whey was to make lactic acid. Or at least on paper, it looked like a clever thing to use the lactose, particularly if you got rid of the protein first, which we can use in other places. You had this basically sugar solution, which you could make to lactic acid. But what's the problem? If it came from whey, it's a dairy product. So it would have to be kosher, which it was, but it would have to be kosher dairy. Now, where do people use lactic acid? They use lactic acid commercially, mainly, though not solely, in things like pickles and olives. Well, pickles and olives are something you want to have with your corned beef sandwich, with your pastrami sandwich, and you can't have a dairy pickle or a dairy olive. So that, in fact, in talking to the company after they gave up on this project, they admitted that there were other issues, but certainly the fact that, again, pickles and olives are very easy to make kosher, the companies making them all were kosher supervised, they really weren't interested in having to mark their products as dairy. They were parv, and they were happy to keep it that way. The price saving for buying it was not worth the impact it would have on their market. So in fact, a very good scientific project failed because the companies that were involved in the project didn't look at kosher upfront and ahead of time.